Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Public Performance and Copyright Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 25, 2014, the Supreme Court issued its opinion in American Broadcasting Companies v. Arroyo. This case involves the question of whether, under Sections 101 and 106 of the Copyright Act, a company publicly performs a copyrighted television program, a privilege normally reserved to the copyright holder, when it retransmits a broadcast of that program to thousands of paid subscribers over the internet. In an opinion delivered by Justice Breyer, the court held by a vote of 6-3 that Arroyo is not simply an equipment supplier and that it performs petitioners' works publicly within the meaning of the transmit clause. Chief Justice Roberts, as well as Justice Kennedy, Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan joined the opinion of the court. Justice Scalia authored a dissenting opinion, which Justices Thomas and Alito joined. The decision of the Second Circuit was reversed. To discuss the case, we have Mark Schultz, who is an associate professor of law at the Southern Illinois University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Schultz.
Now, this opinion came out about 2 weeks ago, so I suppose you could call this an early second look at the opinion. I have the benefit of seeing others' immediate reactions, but perhaps not the benefit of extended study and development, watching developments. However, because of that, I have an opportunity to describe some of the immediate reactions and respond briefly to them, and to respond to one new early development as of yesterday, with Arroyo announcing plans to attempt to continue on in its business with a new legal strategy. So I'll talk about that. But first, let's get to the facts. So Arroyo is a company who arguably engaged in technological innovation, but definitely engaged in legal innovation. Its system was really the product of legal engineering rather than truly innovative engineering. There were parts of it that were quite interesting. Let me describe it. So Arroyo developed in response to a perceived loophole in the Copyright Act. Generally, you can't take other people's content and redistribute it without permission from the copyright owner, and thus the requirement is the copyright owner usually asks to be paid. And so, however, there developed a line of cases and legal doctrine that gave Arroyo the belief that it had an opportunity to design its system around the law such that it wouldn't be considered to be the party responsible for redistributing these works. Let me get into the statutory language precisely that applies here. So the question in the case, as presented to the Supreme Court, was whether Arroyo was publicly performing works that it was rebroadcasting to its customers. What Arroyo had done is set up a system of very small antennas, about the size of a dime. It would set these dime-sized antennas up on large arrays in local markets and capture the over-the-air broadcast signal. It would then send that over-the-air broadcast signal to subscribers and charge them for it. Now, one might ask why it was setting up the system of very small antennas. The reason was because Arroyo was building an architecture in which it arguably was engaging in a one-to-one transmission. If we think of a performance, we think of one person performing to many, a performer standing on a stage performing to an audience, a terrestrial radio station broadcasting over the airwaves to an audience of potentially thousands or millions. What Arroyo was doing, because of its architecture, was able to assign an individual antenna to each customer who received their own unique copy of the programs. And what Arroyo argued further was that it was doing the equivalent of providing an antenna with a very long cable attached to it. And it was not, in fact, redistributing the programs. It was just simply renting antenna space, and that the user was choosing which programs to watch or record. There was a DVR function in here as well. And Aereo had nothing to do with it. Aereo was simply a passive system providing an antenna. And this was the basis in which Aereo argued that it was not subject to the Copyright Act and did not have to get permission, because ultimately the end user, we as individuals, have a implied license or rights to receive free over-the-air broadcast television. It's there for the taking. And if Aereo is simply supplying an antenna, it's not actually performing or transmitting the signal. So the Copyright Act indeed has a public performance right. That's the exclusive right of the owner, of the copyright owner, section 106, the exclusive right to perform the copyrighted work publicly. And the Act further contains something called the transmit clause that says the public performance right includes the right to transmit or otherwise communicate a performance of the copyrighted work to the public by means of any device or process, whether the members of the public capable of receiving the performance receive it in the same place or in separate places and at the same time or at different times. So the question was whether this clause and the public performance right applied to Aereo. And at both the district and appellate court levels, Aereo won. However, the Supreme Court reversed the Second Circuit, and thus Aereo's argument was defeated. So Justice Breyer wrote for the majority of six justices. And Justice Breyer showed little patience for the legal engineering in which Aereo engaged. He dismissed the focus on the behind-the-scenes way, this is a quote from Justice Breyer, but the behind-the-scenes way in which Aereo delivers television programming to its viewer screens. He noted that Aereo had the same commercial aims and provided the same experience as any other consumer TV provider, specifically as any cable system. Justice Breyer asked, why should any of these technological differences matter? Why would a subscriber who wishes to watch a television show care much whether images and sounds are delivered to a screen via a large multi-subscriber antenna or one small dedicated antenna? So ultimately, Justice Breyer focused on the similarity to cable TV systems, and he further looked to the legislative intent underlying the 1976 Copyright Act, which Congress explicitly set out to overrule previous Supreme Court decisions to essentially alter the Copyright Act because of prior Supreme Court decisions that had exempted cable TV systems from the Copyright Act. So Justice Breyer, relying on this legislative intent and the similarity of Aereo to a cable system, he described it as the substantial similarity of Aereo to cable TV systems, the court held that Aereo was indeed publicly performing the programs it was retransmitting to its customers. Now, Justice Breyer was clearly concerned about the implications of the holding for cloud computing and other technologies, so the court repeatedly attempted to reassure that the scope of the holding was narrow and concluded with the statement that given the limited nature of this holding, the court does not believe its decision will discourage the emergence or use of different kinds of technologies. Justice Scalia dissented, joined by Justices Thomas and Alito. And briefly to describe the dissent, first of all, clearly as anyone who knows Justice Scalia's jurisprudence knows that he was not impressed with Justice Breyer's reliance on legislative history. More to the point, though, he complained of guilt by resemblance of a essentially the fact that Aereo resembled a cable system was not enough to persuade him that Aereo should be treated as one under the Copyright Act. And indeed, he said that although that he was not clearly was not sympathetic to what Aereo was doing, he saw that as a matter for Congress to fix, not the court. He particularly complained that the decision blurred the distinction between secondary and direct liability under copyright law because he, as the dissent pointed out, essentially Justice Breyer's opinion fails to point out exactly where the infringement occurs. It's more in the what Justice Breyer did is more in the nature of drawing a large circle around the entire system and saying it looks like a public performance somewhere in there that's happening, and thus there's infringement without identifying where the particular instance of infringement, in this case the unauthorized public performance, is occurring. I'll briefly describe a few critiques and reactions to the opinion. Of course, there were fairly strong critiques and reactions from the losing side, people claiming that the court was going to harm innovation, that the court had made copyright law terribly unclear and would have a chilling effect on startups. I think some of the more interesting, less rhetorical reactions are the following. One common reaction was that this was a very much an instrumentalist opinion, that the court did not approve of what Aereo was doing, wanted to stop it, saw what Aereo was doing as too clever by half, and found a way to stop it, but was also concerned with potential effects on cloud computing, and so tried to craft a holding that narrowly addressed the subject matter and did not have further implications. However, a response to that take by the Electronic Frontier Foundation and many others was that the court has injected some ambiguity into what was once a clearer standard as to who is liable. One complaint particularly that attorneys from the Electronic Frontier Foundation made is that a future lawyer counseling a new startup business is going to have some difficulty counseling whether their business model of using television signals is permissible given the court's explicit reliance on case-by-case decision-making. They critiqued the opinion as offering vague criteria. However, others, such as Professor David Post, saw the decision as narrow, limited to what you may or may not do with over-the-air broadcast signals, and thus unlikely to have a broader effect on innovation. One take I thought was particularly interesting by Terry Hart of the Copyright Alliance was one way to understand the court's opinion and perhaps offer some greater certainty in the future to future innovators, as the Electronic Frontier Foundation was concerned with, was to understand this as understand the Aereo opinion as looking to the principles of proximate cause, that although copyright infringement is a strict liability offense, courts in tort cases still must determine often must determine whether a particular actor is responsible for the harm incurred in the case and whether strict liability should apply. And in that regard, he said that the court offered some principles such as the ability to control the infringement through physical ownership of the facilities, who actually provides the work, in this case Aereo, and they were in the best position to know whether somebody possessed the rights, and looking at the range of use of the services. Aereo was specifically set up as a television service to redistribute broadcast signals, and so there was a foreseeability and intent that the purpose for which it would be used was definitely reperforming signals. And thus Mr. Hart argues that looking to these principles, there is both a limiting and useful principle in the Aereo opinion that can be applied to further copyright law. I'll look to one last take on this, and I think that this last take is particularly insightful. Professor Gus Hurwitz, who's a communications expert writing for the American Enterprise Institute, argued that, as communications law expert, argued that Aereo was really properly a decision about communications law policy, and that the court instead focused on the issue of public performance, because that's how the parties framed the issue, chose to frame the issue. They apparently both wanted to avoid other issues in the case, but other potential issues. But what Professor Hurwitz points out is that under Section 111 of the Copyright Act, the Copyright Act offered the court an opportunity to look to the fact that those who make secondary transmissions of broadcast signals are liable for copyright infringement unless a particular statutory exemption applies. And as Professor Hurwitz argued, clearly what Aereo does appears to be a secondary transmission. The primary transmission comes from the broadcast network. There are some reasons why both parties wish to avoid this, because it likely put them into the discussion of whether Aereo was cable system or not under Section 111, which brings me to my final point and an interesting recent development within the last 24 hours. You see, Section 111 of the Copyright Act provides for a compulsory license for cable systems. A local cable system may rebroadcast the content on broadcast signals, and it may do so freely under compulsory license. In other words, it's allowed to do so, but it must pay a statutory fee mandated under the Copyright Act. Now, Aereo has now declared that it intends to pursue this strategy. Aereo, prior to losing in the Supreme Court, vehemently argued that it was not a cable system and that it owed no fees, statutory or otherwise. Now Aereo has taken a 180-degree turn, and as of yesterday is claiming that it is a cable system, that it meets the definition of cable system under the Copyright Act, and I think it has a reasonable argument for doing so, and thus is subject to the compulsory license and need only pay statutory fees. Now, there's a further wrinkle here that isn't being mentioned in the news coverage and isn't being mentioned immediately by Aereo. A cable system may indeed rebroadcast under a compulsory license and only have to pay the statutory fee to the content owners, so the creator of a television program gets the statutory fee mandated by the statute. However, under the Communications Act, different from the Copyright, the Communications Act, cable systems or multi-channel video providers must get retransmission consent to rebroadcast the signal from the broadcaster, right? So we have two statutory schemes. Copyright Act mandates the rights of copyright owners, who are the people who create the television programs, whereas the Communications Act mandates the rights of the local broadcasters, and the local broadcasters have the right to charge for the retransmission of their signal, and indeed that retransmission requires consent. Aereo, of course, is not addressing the Communications Act in its latest arguments. One can only speculate why, and it may be because there are two different definitions of cable system, of to whom each act applies. And Aereo arguably comes under the Copyright Act definition pretty comfortably, and probably pretty comfortably comes under the Communications Act definition as well, but it appears that I could only speculate that Aereo perhaps will try to argue that it may pay the compulsory license but need not enter into retransmission consent negotiations and pay a negotiated fee to the broadcasters. It's likely that the broadcasters would not give retransmission consent. I'm only speculating here. My guess is that for business reasons, they would prefer to retain control over their transition to internet video develop their own services rather than work with Aereo. But perhaps they might work it out. But for now, Aereo appears to be relying solely on a Section 111 argument. That Section 111 argument also, of course, is an opportunity to limit damages as well for its past conduct, and that may be part of what it's attempting to do.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.